Oh, yeah.
I just want to say, what is love?
Okay. What is love? I'll tell you what love is. You
just
want to
say it? I mean, just imagine if you were saying, instead of what is love, they go, stolen love, right? That's more sexy.
I'll tell you what love is. Love is my bumps. My lovely butter bumps.
Let's just start over.
Butter bumps.
Listen, Eric, there's nothing wrong with having rigid form to your posterior.
Rigid form? I was trying to reference Butterbumps, the fool.
Well, now we're talking about your Butterbumps. What?
Yeah, well, okay. On the topic of my Butterbumps. Come at
you
me, bro.
The door, Eric.
Have a listen to some of our behind-the-scenes, I was going to say footage, but whatever, footage. later in the week, if you want to hear a backstory on Eric's transitional skills that Mike has been wiring in tonight. It's Game of Thrones.
Yeah, well, I don't know what, if anything, can compete with. Tell your father I'm here.
Not many things.
You guys like that
on
social media this week?
Yes, a lot of people. So you've ruined that phrase for a lot of people, Michael.
I ruined it. By the way, I didn't post it on social media. So I'm not sure who the culprit is, but it wasn't me. So that leaves three. End strike.
It was random. It was just like
to get to the keyboard
one day at like 12:30 p.m. from the Game of Thrones Twitter. One random day. What is it, like a Wednesday?
I don't know.
It was August 28th.
I don't know. Only the person who posted it would know what day it was.
Buckbeak.
The 28th. It was Thursday. It was a random Thursday at like 12:37 p.m. on an unspectacular time.
To be fair,
exceptional.
What makes the Thursday not random?
It's
because maybe this made the Thursday significant.
It did. I mean, we were just going about our days. I'm sure that I was somewhere random off a street in a western suburb of Chicago, and I get a little text on my phone because I get the Game of Thrones tweets to my phone, and I see on Facebook, all it says is, Game of Thrones, tell your father I'm here.
That's all it needs to say.
Kate wrote it. I think.
What else? Yeah. What? Yeah.
She wrote it. Well, she was.
I don't even have Facebook.
We had immediate thrills and reactions and responses. Amanda Vivian Howard on Facebook said, quote,
immediate butter bumps.
I love / hate that when I read this, all I hear in my head is Micah's voice.
A lot of people said that.
Mike Burns goes, not hate. He goes, classic Game of Thrones.
Classic. That's a relatively new joke, but
Dave Clark on
classic.
Facebook quoted Zach and said, Dad, Mike is here, which fucking killed me when I heard it. Oh my god.
There's very little on our show here that doesn't fucking kill you, Kate.
I know, I laugh too much. That's like my thing now.
No, not too much. There's no such thing as laughing
you
too
Lannisters,
much.
You Lannisters with your gold and your lions. And your gold lions. These are good. You guys have been fun this week.
Yeah.
It's been a good
for
week for us. We've been very excited to ease into
this chapter. Was major because this was previous. I don't know. Obviously, you Unsullied don't remember this, Michael. You might remember, but this was the preview chapter, either at the end of Clash of Kings or something that was released between Clash and Storm, and this was. Like, this was the one thing that you could, like, was your teaser for Storm of Swords. And it was her telling Olenna and Margaery this whole thing about Joffrey being a monster. It was an awesome, awesome teaser chapter. And you just, like, you knew that this book was going to be awesome just from
that
it.
That is so brilliant. Like, I think that we're over the hump of the beginning of the book. I mean, we're about 100 pages in to the book, and we've had, like, a great start, as we've discussed in recent weeks. But, like, the Sansa chapter, it's no less important. It's no less exciting. It's twice as long as the Davos one before it. But you do get the sense of fear and grip for Sansa, but now you're kind of thinking about court again after a long way away. So as a preview, it kind of skipped all that, you know, hubbub and action in the beginning of this book, but it still gives you the suspense of knowing that something that this storyline has to play itself out.
And not only that, but it puts Sansa, who's just had the short end of the stick handed to her time and time again for the entirety of this book, it feels like, or the entirety of this story. But she's finally been put into a situation where powerful people, Margaery's going to be the next queen. Olenna is the matriarch of House Tyrell, and she's awesome. But she's given this secret and been put under the protection of the Tyrell house. And you finally have this moment of like, Sansa might actually be safe finally, after all of the stuff she's been through, this might actually be something that's people are going to be able to protect her from the Lannisters at long last. He's given you, he, of course, being George R. R. Martin, he's giving us this
false sense of security.
Precisely.
Yeah. False.
Obviously. Well, yeah. I mean, we all know what happens.
You know, I just think it is nice to think that Sansa might get out of there. You know, King's Landing, where she's been trapped for better or for worse there.
Yeah.
One of the best things, this chapter is almost entirely about women. There's some stuff about Loras and Renly that we should, of course, talk to, but it's mostly about these women who are generally treated pretty, I mean, it's a misogynist culture. I wouldn't say that George necessarily writes in a misogynist way, but it's definitely a culture that where women are objects of court and politics, and they're not necessarily as important to the realm as the men. But in this chapter, they are using what they can use to exert their own power and to control someone's destiny in a way that is good and helps her to escape from this crushing environment that she's in, which I really love.
Hold right there, Kate, because that makes me think of something, though. Does Olenna, you mentioned these women being held off to the side. Does Olenna treat these women that she's dining with any better, really, though? Because the major players in this chapter, of course, Lady Olenna Tyrell, the Queen of Thorns, her granddaughter Marjorie, and Sansa. But there are, unlike the show, there are like 12 other women.
I'm not saying that all women are awesome and brilliant and conniving or anything. I'm just like, some of them might be dumb. Some of them might be smart. Olenna doesn't have time for fools, which is a trait that I admire very much. And if she perceives that these women are fools, then that's what she perceives. My point is not that Olenna loves everyone and she treats everyone really beautifully. That's definitely not what I'm saying. And I don't think anyone would accuse her of that. What I'm saying is that in this chapter, women are allowed to write their own chapter of a book, essentially, kind of literally. They're allowed to have a say in their own fate, or at least attempt to. You know, they're allowed to make a difference in someone's life, where that doesn't necessarily happen all the time in this series or in real life for that matter. But it's been a really cool thing to see in this series, where you have even like Cersei is getting married off to random people. You know, she gets married off to Robert, and she's still the queen, but she's still at the mercy of the men around her in a lot of ways. So to be able to, for these women to just be like, yeah, you know what? You're going to come to Highgarden. I think we'll take care of you. It's nice.
Yeah.
It's a nice thing to do. They're using that ability to marry Sansa off to a member of the Tyrell family as a way of protecting her and making sure her life improves. And that's awesome. Working in the system. I love it.
But also using her at the same time.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I think that's the important thing here too. And you get outsider perspective for the first time in a while, I think, because you are so exposed to what is going through the mind of the Queen of Thorns, and here's somebody who's from outside of King's Landing, but yet you still see a lot of the same. Even if you don't want to compare a character like her to Cersei, they're both ultimately looking for similar things. I don't necessarily think that she wants to be, you know, the Queen of Westeros, but she does want what's best for her family, and you see how all these internal politics play themselves out just in the way that she talks about all these different people. And, you know, the people who she has surrounding her, as you mentioned, who don't make it into the show, there's quite a large group of people there. But, you know, she mentions Varys at one time. She talks about Renly. She talks about Loras. You think that because you spent so much time with these other characters earlier on in the series that, you know, that they're all that matters, they're all that's important. But now you're introduced really for one of the first times to another family, and you see just how much they're playing the game as the Lannisters or the Starks or the Targaryens.
Yeah, and Marjorie too Olenna's an incredible character and she plays the game. But Marjorie, I remember when I first read this chapter, I was really impressed with her because she's 16 and she's this, you know, delicate, beautiful woman, and everybody's in love with her in the town, and she's doing all these acts of generosity, and everybody's very much looking forward to her being queen and marrying Joffrey, everything else. But when she learns from Sansa the kind of treatment that she's been subjected to, at Joffrey's hand, she doesn't really freak out. Like she's a 16-year-old girl, and she's just learned that this man is probably going to beat her and be super cruel to her. And she's like, yep, I was afraid of that. But it doesn't change her mind. You know, she's just like, all right, that's good to know. Figured as much. And like, she's just so cool and so like, so she's just stone cold. Even at 16 years old, she's like, all right, good information. I will proceed knowing that is exactly as I thought it was going to be.
There's really nothing she can't handle.
Yeah. Like the Tyrells are kind of, I mean, Mace is always portrayed as this bumbling idiot, but the ladies of House Tyrell are pretty solid. They're a tough bunch.
They've got a good mentor in that sense.
Yeah, they sure do.
This chapter was so hopeful in many different ways, not only just the resonating tone of girl power, but also kind of a fourth wall being broken where one of our characters is speaking on an internal truth that isn't normally vocalized, that's normally just played out in broken bits of inner monologue during the actual happenings. But it's like a good release. She's actually speaking it, you know, when the fool is singing,
yeah,
and she lays out how she feels about Joffrey. I think that it kind of mirrors a lot of what Elena was saying earlier in the chapter. You know, she's speaking so much and we're learning so much about the differences between men and women and all the implications that carries. But her sort of rudeness, more of disdain toward her hens, as she calls them, I think it just comes from a different place than the brutality that the men in this story have toward the women. It's just not from the same place. It's more of a disdain, more of just like, you guys are going to do nothing to help the situation. I can hardly even lead by example because I'm now too old and not very willing to be taken seriously of. And I'm going to do my best to operate all the things that I know need to be done through Margaery. And I think that her being groomed is so evident just in the way she's reacted to all of this.
Mm-hmm. There's this whole chapter is run by Olenna Tyrell. There's a lot of things that happen. Sansa gets escorted down to the dinner with Loras, and she's very taken with him, of course, because he's so handsome. And she makes the mistake of mentioning Renly, which if you don't understand that there's a romantic relationship between Loras and Renly, then Loras clams up and he gets very rude, and it's kind of, you're as puzzled as Sansa is until you remember, like, oh yeah, I mean, we can't really talk about Renly dying in an offhand way because that's Loras's lover.
Yeah, well, she thinks it's because of the other knight that she mentioned too.
Exactly.
And because of that, it's just like, oh, I shouldn't have mentioned him. And it's just because it's like, well, okay. I love how it's like paratextual. You're just like, nope, it was Renly. That's why he clammed up. But she doesn't know. And seeing her gradual blossoming of Sansa into someone who is aware of things, it's really interesting to see her not be totally aware of everything just yet. So there are still a bit of innocence in Sansa, and I think it's kind of a beautiful chapter.
I wouldn't call it innocence.
It's foolishness.
It's ignorance on some level, and that maybe not as much with the Renly and Loras relationship, but I feel like she's very much ignorant throughout this chapter, even when she's having the conversation with the Queen of Thorns, and you know, she's very much her age, and I think though that's okay. You know, it's not necessarily looked upon as a bad thing, but you know, in she's so afraid of speaking the truth, of saying things that she shouldn't, or for going on too long. And you know, this is the Sansa that a lot of us, having read the books, you know, it's still there.
Is it ignorance? Is it not innocence? I mean, she just wants to be loved with a prince. Like when she thinks it's Loras that she's going to, you know, be wed to under Margaery's plan, she goes into a fantasy world. It's right back where she was when he was escorting her down to dinner. I mean, I think there is
I think some of it is innocence. I'll grant you that. But I think she's also very ignorant to what goes on around her. And what is happening within the context of a lot of the situations that she's put in. She even recalls the fact that the Hound was willing to take her away the night of the Blackwater battle, and she decided not to go.
Yeah.
Like she would have been gone from King's Landing. Yep. She wouldn't have even been in this situation anymore. Is that ignorance or is that innocence?
It's hard to say. It's kind of a dodgy situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think she knows that she made the wrong choice there. Like, I think that's kind of what she reflects on in the beginning of the chapter when she mentions the Hound.
I mean, you could look at it as good decision making too. Don't get me wrong, but
well,
I'm just saying, you know, you still, she hasn't fully matured or gotten to the point where she's that badass that we see at the end of season 4.
Oh yeah,
in the Eerie, right?
Well, but yeah,
you will see this gradual transformation of her character, and I think that a lot of these situations that she's gone through and that we're now reading through in this chapter will play into that.
From the beginning, the invitation seemed innocent enough, but every time Sansa read it, her tummy tightened into a knot. She's to be queen now. She's beautiful and rich, and everyone loves her. Why would she want to sup with a traitor's daughter? It could be curiosity, she supposed. Perhaps Margaery Tyrell wanted to get the measure of the rival she displaced. Does she resent me? I wonder. Does she think I bear her ill will?
Sansa had watched from the castle walls as Margaery Tyrell and her escort made their way up Aegon's high hill. Joffrey had met his new bride-to-be at the King's Gate to welcome her to the city, and they rode side by side through cheering crowds, Joff glittering in gilded armor, and the Tyrell girl splendid in green with a cloak of autumn flowers blowing from her shoulders. She was 16, brown-haired and brown-eyed, slender and beautiful. The people called out her name as she passed, held up their children for her blessing, and scattered flowers under the hooves of her horse. Her mother and grandmother followed. The same small folk who pulled me from my horse and would have killed me, if not for the Hound.
Ooh. Yeah, and for what I just said, though, in this moment, the very first paragraph that you read, Zach, she's starting to play the game in her mind.
Exactly.
She's saying to herself, hold on a second, is this legitimate or is it a trap? Am I being set up here
right.
to just be beaten and stripped naked? I don't have anybody to save me like Tyrion did the last time this happened. You know, Tyrion is still recovering from his wounds. And so
will Joffrey be there?
Yeah, it's all of that, but it shows you that she's starting to think like a player in the game.
She's just smartly assessing if she has anybody, and she doesn't. The Hound left. Tyrion is, as you say, recovering. Like, she does question the nature of this invitation rather than just gush about it. I mean, I really like at the end of the second paragraph where they talk about the crowd, because this is a crowd. I mean, during the riots, where Sansa was attacked by these same people who are now cheering on Margaery Tyrell. It's just an interesting contrast because that public, you know, we fear them. We fear for Sansa.
So you've got the small folk that are celebrating the arrival of these people, which we can assume is attributed to the new influx of foodstuffs making its way into the Landing of Kings, which...
It all goes down to food.
Makes sense. I mean, they're winning allegiances any way that they can. And again, Sansa kind of makes an offhand remark in her mind, nothing that Margaery has done, because I think that we're meant to know that there's so much more at play here, especially when just getting the grand perspective of it all. I feel like the show can't do... There just isn't a budget and there just isn't literal time there to give us like the full girth of what a royal-ish arrival into King's Landing actually is. But this is a litter that's being... Is it a litter? I forget what she's riding in exactly, Olenna. But it's basically a carriage of thousands of roses, silvery and like carved beautifully into wood. And they're being taken to the place where the people that rule the entire world for their minds live. And there's tents being thrown up behind large keeps in the interior parts of the castle. And there's people training. It's busy. It's buzzy. There's a hubbub. There's happening surrounding all of this. What really grounds the chapter is that within all of this, this important person wants to see Sansa so badly and wants to just know a little bit of information from her. And it just does a really good job of making her very important.
Do you guys feel like there's any other kind of motivation on the part of the Tyrells besides protection of Sansa? Is she politically valuable?
Yeah, fucking up Cersei's plans, man.
Lots of things. There's lots of possibilities, yeah.
No, I'll let Zach and Eric reply, and then I'll chime in, I guess.
Well, just what Micah said. She clearly has disdain for the Lannisters, and she says as much, you know, it's evident in the way she speaks and what she says to Sansa about the Lannisters, how she regards them. I think that's pretty much it. She does want to insert herself in the game and fuck shit up for the Lannisters. I think that's pretty clear.
But the Lannisters don't have any plan for Sansa at this point, do they? She's just a prisoner.
Other than just keeping her for the North, I guess.
Yeah, knowing the nature of Joffrey, which they find out, I think it's clear that she's just going to be harmed. I don't know. It's interesting because for me, I'm thinking, well, marriage in the books also means it's as political as it is anything else. And so I'm wondering why this offer comes to marry Sansa to Willem, Tyrell Willis. I'm wondering why, like, what that, if that has an ulterior motive, but I'm wondering what the benefits of that would be for Highgarden. I mean, they are from the south, it is said, at least. You know, and the Starks, again, Winterfell being in the north, I'm wondering if they're trying to do like what the Lannisters have, being wardens of the east and the west and that kind of thing. I'm wondering if they're kind of have a larger game plan for having their families united across the lands.
Yeah. And it's almost like they're trying to back all the different horses. Like they're marrying Margaery to Joffrey because he's the king and Margaery would be the queen. But if Sansa ends up being the sister of the king in the north and the Lannisters lose, then they are married into the royal family. Like, are they just covering their bases? Like, what's going on there?
Well, I think it's because of Lord Puffish of Highgarden sticking his neck out, right? I think Olenna says as much when she. I can't forget the exact. Or I can't remember the exact quote. Actually, do you have it?
I got it for you.
Read it, dude.
She says, "My son ought to take the Puffish for his sigil. If truth be told, he could put a crown on it, the way the Baratheons do their stag. Mayhap that would make him happy. We should have stayed well out of all this bloody foolishness, if you ask me." But once the cow's been milked, there's no squirting the cream back up her udder. Yeah, and then it just goes on to say, after Lord Pufffish put that crown on Renly's head, we were into the pudding up to our knees. So here we are to see things through. And what do you say to that, Sansa?
Exactly. That's the whole bit. Like
Olenna Tyrell impression is terrible. I was going to do this whole, like, Professor McGonagall thing when I read what this
you
quote.
You should swords. Totally.
Oh boy.
She doesn't want to see this done half-assed. She understands that they were pretty well off the way they were. It's already pretty cool that they're the ones running Highgarden after history is told. Why not? Like, chill out. But instead, they took an opportunity because Renly showered really well and he knew just how to put on clothes that fit. So of course that made him feel kingly and made him feel like he had it right after everything went down. So the Tyrells are going through with it, all right? And what's wrong with marrying off a spare person from the north that just so happens to be the oldest lady and just so happens to be, you know, a blood tie directly to a large area of land in the north part of the country, you know?
Did Why you not? Call her the oldest lady?
She's the oldest lady of the Stark kids, right?
Oh, I see. Of the Stark kids. Okay.
I wish I had a perfect mind to say the perfect things.
Sorry. I thought you were talking about Olenna Tyrell again. Like, she's the oldest lady.
She's an old, dirty lady. She's like, I knew your grandfather, Sansa. Not really well. Not in that way. But
not biblically.
I think Olenna is it's a balancing act in how she's treating Sansa at this point. You know, offering up the marriage is political, but I also think there's a part of her that probably does care about her well-being. I think she sees her as somebody who's being pretty seriously mistreated, and it's just validated. And it's fair to say at this point that Varys has supplied her with certain knowledge about how Joffrey treats her. And I think that she, at the end of the day, you know, she does want to make sure that Sansa is in a safe place. And if at the same time she can achieve the goal of screwing up the Lannisters' plans, I think that she's more than happy to do that.
It's interesting that you say that you feel like Varys has supplied Olenna with information, because I think that you're correct. And so I wonder what the purpose then of having Sansa tell them herself was, except to maybe determine if Sansa had balls. Like,
yeah,
size her up.
I think that's what it is. I mean, yeah. To see if she wouldn't be so brainwashed or wouldn't be so timid as to not, on, you know, despite her fear, to level with them.
Right, about, just stick to the party line.
Well, what's the point of moving forward with plans that you could, like, really zero in and figure out whether or not maybe the Stark girl could be an ally, you know, or maybe she can't be trusted, or like she says in the chapter, maybe she is as daft as everyone is saying she is. So I think that, you know, if it just cost her an evening and a dinner, like it wasn't much to trade off for learning all there is about this person that her daughter is replacing as queen.
Especially when you're already hosting seven or eight other women.
Granddaughter.
Yeah.
And let's not forget, there's a lot that's going on behind the scenes here. And we saw in the show this season what the Queen of Thorns' role is as it relates to Joffrey and what happens to him. So
do you think that plan is in action already? Because I don't.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's in action already. And the reason why I say that is this could be, in a way, justification, you know, almost evidence as to why, you know, confirmation of why she should go through with her plan. Because, you know, Olenna has been around King's Landing now for a period of time. She's gotten to see Joffrey. She's gotten to see Tommen. And maybe Tommen looks a little bit better of an option, even though he's, what, 9 years old?
Still, I don't quite know that you'd be at that level where you just meet your future in-laws and then you're like, well, I like that younger one a little bit better. Maybe I should start one right now to kill the main guy and have his little brother take over. Like, I don't think it's there yet, though. I mean, I think for me, it was when they spoke to Sansa that they really understood that this is that Margaery and Olenna both understood that Joffrey was going to be an issue.
Well, I think again that she already had an idea of what he was like. I think this conversation was more affirmation of what she already knew. She wanted to hear it from the horse's mouth, and this may set into motion certain things that happen later on.
Mm-hmm. I think that's safe to say.
I'm rereading the paragraph where Margaery is describing Highgarden to Sansa, and knowing what Sansa's fate is, which is, of course, to never actually get to Highgarden.
Oh, never?
It is just
not calm
so,
anyway. No.
It is so distressing because you go on this little mental vacation. Can I read this to you guys? You want
sure.
a little vacation
I'll have
to Highgarden?
Read it in a All Professor right. McGonagall voice.
No, that's for Olenna. This is Margaery. I want you guys to just close your eyes.
Guided
your eyes.
Meditation. Here we go.
And we're going to go. We're going to take a little trip to Highgarden.
Okay.
Here we go.
Why do I hear the ocean?
That's because it's on the sea. All the autumn flowers are in bloom just now, and there are groves and fountains, shady courtyards, marble colonnades. My lord father always keeps singers at the court, sweeter ones than butters here, and pipers and fiddlers and harpers as well. We have the best horses and pleasure boats to sail along the Mander. Do you hawk, Sansa? Are you kidding me?
Hey, read her response.
A little, she admitted.
She admitted it. I'm so glad we have a podcast where, like, we can go on the record and admit things to our listeners and grow close to them. So I'm going to take this moment to tell everyone that I hawk.
I've never hawked.
I hawk a bit.
Yeah.
Do a little hawking.
It's important.
You know, it's what I love.
Clears the throat.
Not that kind of hawking, Micah.
That was actually a good reading, Kate. I like when you said best horses. I was like, these horses are great.
I've been practicing because I've been reading Watership Down out loud to my boyfriend at night to help him fall asleep. So I'm getting pretty good at the whole reading out loud thing.
That's actually one of our Patreon reward levels.
Oh,
Kate,
no.
Reading you sleep. It's up there.
Oh, no. The Patreon reward level is you send me a joke and I'll record myself reading it and then laughing.
That's the best.
Okay. I like that one.
That's not good. Don't
that
do that one.
That's pretty good. Anyway. So Highgarden, anyway.
Highgarden sounds baller. It sounds so cool.
It does.
And it seems like something Sansa would love. It's like the perfect princess vacation that she's always been dreaming that court would be like, and not this bullshit that she's been put through.
Yeah,
that's the thing, though.
Taste it, you know.
Yeah, she did say she felt this way about King's Landing. Like, she was just as hopeful about King's Landing being as romantic as the nation's capital. So I wonder if Highgarden really is that cool. Like,
well, that we'll never know because she doesn't get to go there. She gets.
You keep saying never.
Spirited away.
Well, you know something that I don't. I'm sure you know several things.
She goes there. But when I say never, I'm referring to the end of the show as we've seen it.
That's good to clarify. Well, I wanted to draw the comparison earlier to Theon. Bear with me for a moment. But when Olenna is, you know, testing Sansa, she's trying to make sure that she's not, you know, too beaten and downtrodden to appreciate what she's going to try to do for the girl. You know, Theon, as we've seen in the show, gets beaten and brainwashed to the point where he will betray his own people.
And forgets his name.
You know, forget. Well, yeah, much, much more extreme example. And I think they really just don't know until they meet with Sansa how battered she is, and how, you know, whether or not she's going to be able to, not just speak ill against the Lannisters, but to come away for whatever future causes they may have for her, to know that she can stand up and say, yes, he's a monster, even with these other women. And I understand they're distracted by this clown or whatever.
He's a
but
fool.
She says in a room full of people that he's a monster. You know, it's not just some tent somewhere with the occasional cheese boy coming around. This is in front of a bunch of people. She has said he's a monster. And I think that's a really big character moment for her.
I also want to do like a quick shout out here to Sophie Turner. Her performance when she enacted this scene was so good. Like her fear of Joffrey as she's telling the story.
I couldn't stop thinking about it when I was reading.
So good. There's nobody else that could have played this role.
Nathan wrote into Facebook. He said, looking forward to Zach and Eric's reaction to butter bumps, as I like to call butter stuff. Butternuts.
Butternuts. So, Kate and Micah, you can sit this one out. Zach, what do you think about butter bumps?
I don't want them to sit it out because I don't even know what to think about this guy. He's an enigma wrapped in a mystery, wrapped in a pastry, wrapped in a lie.
Huh?
Hmm?
What?
Hmm?
Butter Zach bumps? Said all there is to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder how... Patchface is cryptic. Patchface has like a more cryptic element to him than Butterbumps.
Butterbumps is talented. Can we just get that out of the way? I mean, this guy is an accomplished illusionist. I mean, talk about sleight of hand.
The birds, like the chicks, like down that woman's like sleeve, that was impressive.
Yeah, she was about to burst out crying. The Fosways are getting flustered. They're like, where's... Oh, and then, you know, it's just... He really held the evening together. But not only that, he supplied the volume that was necessary for Sansa to even speak ill of Joffrey.
That's true.
In front of,
you know, I was going to say, for how like mean or how critical Olenna was of eunuchs, she says, well, I don't quite see the point in eunuchs. They're the men, but with the best bits chopped off or something like that. You know, I wonder how she feels about clowns, but she utilizes this butter bumps in such a way as to distract all the other women at the table so she can have a quiet moment with Sansa. But you're right. I mean, Butterbumps really does supply the exact distraction that Olenna needs to pull this off. And he sings, offers to sing upside down on his head, even.
Will that make you sound better?
No. No.
Okay, well, just use your feet. Moving on.
Unbelievable. Like, yeah. This fool, hey, he's, you know, he's not the only fool mentioned in this chapter. Of course, there was a little brief bit about Ser Dantas Hollard and his everlasting promise to take Sansa away himself on the wedding day. But this fool, I'd say, is more promising.
I think that's important, though, too, is that this whole plan is being made for that wedding day, whereas in the show, Dantos was gone for such a long period of time, and then all of a sudden they run into each other. It might have even been in the same episode, if not the episode before.
Right.
And it's much more planned out in this, in you know, between the last book and this book. And so when it actually happens, it seems like it has a little bit more substance and backstory to it. But as far as Butterbumps goes, he's just, he serves a dual purpose, right?
He's a big guy.
For Sansa, to make her feel at ease, to make her feel comfortable, to maybe put a smile on her face, but also, as you guys had mentioned, to really take the attention off of the conversation that's happening between Margaery and Olenna and Sansa. And you wonder if Olenna's used this tactic before at all. Like, does Butterbumps know all the family secrets and everything that's going on? Like, anytime she needs to have quiet, because she mentions that there's also spiders in Highgarden. And so is he this tactic that's used to make so much noise and create such a distraction that she's able to go about her business and not attract attention to herself?
I think if anything, it's more reinforcement that she had the evening pretty well planned out and kind of knew what her approach would need to be. And that just shows the care of the situation, which I think does nothing but strengthen this sort of long, strong, and drawn out crescendo from the beginning of the book all the way to the wedding. It's just on many different fronts. We're now looking forward to it because of the possible marriage and the possible trip. Before, we were just kind of wondering what sort of stuff would go down with Dantos. But now there's kind of an official invitation. It's kind of like when Harry was going to live at Grimmauld Place, you know, for about 10 minutes there. It was just like, oh, wait, you're telling me that I'm going to get to go to Highgarden? I mean, I think at this point, we're probably meant to expect that whenever the time reaches, things will probably be so troublesome that it won't matter who she's marrying. She just wants to get out of there.
You know, I'm wondering if it isn't like totally like really super smart for Olenna to have done this in such a public way, at least, at, you know, like a dinner, because if she called Sansa to her in a less public setting, like it may be picked up by these very spiders that exist there. You know, it's like, well, if Cersei Lannister were to find out that Sansa attended this dinner function, you know, she could send her spies there even to it. But it's like, well, no, she was in like with seven other women at the same time. Like there was no
right.
private conversations. Mm-hmm. Clearly no scheming was able to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's super planned. Important. Whereas if she had just called her to her chamber or something one night or gone to visit, she could have been spotted. Like it would have been like hiding in plain sight is really like, is actually really smart. The more you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
But I mean, who's to say that Cersei won't find out the truth.
Mm.
Well, not if the fool can help. All right, so what do? We do owns, we talk about butter stuff, and we move on, right?
We did talk about butter
stuff. We did talk about butter stuff.
You know what I want to talk about? I want to talk about good old Lefty and Righty.
I knew you were going there because your name is a part of it.
Well, not only my name, it's a story of my childhood, which I care to share. So if I can start owns.
You have a twin we don't know about?
If I may.
Let's go back. In vitro.
He just absorbed him.
The question is, am I lefty or righty? No. It's funny because I have an aunt. Actually, I have like four aunts, but one of them lives in Philadelphia, and I grew up about an hour northwest of Philadelphia. And one of the things that characterized my childhood was that she would always call me with a slight Philadelphian accent. It sounded more like Arik than Eric, which is how I say my name. So there was Eric, and then there was what she called me, which was Arik. And now Eric and Arik are both characters in Game of Thrones. So I had to laugh when I read this chapter. And those two gentlemen, who are both like 7 feet tall, get my own.
Left and right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Left and right.
Yeah.
My own goes to Olenna Tyrell, and anybody who has a different own is a bigger fool than Butterbumps.
Ooh. I know he's a pretty big fool.
Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. Three moon boys.
That's true. There's three of them.
I wish you could just measure the weight and measure everything in moon boys. How many moon boys is that?
7 moon boys.
All right. Well, tell me how many moon boys my own gets, okay?
Okay. Okay.
This was directly following Sansa's huge interior battle that we talked about at the beginning of the chapter, where she was trying to decipher what exactly this invitation would entail and what would come with it. Upon thinking all of this out, the book says, sighing, she got out quill and ink and wrote Margaery Tyrell a gracious note of acceptance. Basically, what's happening here is she's thinking all that bullshit, and then just without even a mechanical response, she knew to immediately just flourish out the most congenial general response ever. And that was tough. That was cool of her to do.
Agreed. She definitely, I mean, all those classes that Arya couldn't quite get through are certainly helping Sansa out.
She's a right damn now. Lady.
Yeah.
All right.
She lady keeps her thoughts to herself like a lady should, right, Kate?
No.
I got to give my own to Olenna as well.
Yes.
And ties into a little bit of what I said before when she says, at Highgarden, we have many spiders amongst the flowers. So long as they keep to themselves, we let them spin their little webs. But if they get underfoot, we step on them. Now, child, the truth. What sort of man is this Joffrey who calls himself Baratheon but looks so very Lannister? Oh.
She's so smart.
Yeah.
Ah! All right. So in order, 0 moon boys for Micah. I would say 1 moon boy for Zach and like 5 moon boys for Eric.
What?
Wow. Thank you. Well, let me guess. 2 for each of the 7-foot-tall men named Eric and Arik, and 1 for my story about my childhood.
Yep.
Very good.
Very good.
Thank you.
Yeah, we should give a special shout out though to the person who we quoted earlier on in this episode, because he does get a mention in this chapter for crippling Willis Terrell, and that is Oberyn.
I saw that.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Crippling him and befuddling the maester, Oberyn.
It was that damned Oberyn Martell.
Snake of a Dornishman.
You snake of a Dornishman.
Oh, but his horse, it says his horse fell and crushed his leg, so it wasn't like a cool battle or anything.
No. That's really the thing, is Willis should have, not that you can control when a horse falls on you or not, but I guess there are signs, and you could totally do like a jump, split, roll off.
He was a squire, though. He was probably pretty young at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's possible Oberyn took it too far. I want to know, like, under what circumstances Oberyn was up from Dorne and not bedding women and making children.
Good
at
question.
The time. Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's not a revenge kick, I wonder why he even bothers to go to the same places that Willis, little old Willis Tyrell, the squire, would have been. But I'm sure it was a festival, right? Got to show pageantry and honor.
In light of our first chapter involving the Queen of Thorns, the influx of owns was very strong. There was a spike, and it has allowed us to access a brilliant part of our show that I really introed really poorly just now because my dog was jumping on me.
I think is this the first time we've ever gotten the fart emoji in one of our owns?
There's a fart emoji. Oh, it's a cloud. Jesus.
It's for strike.
That's a fart.
It's a chef's hat sideways.
It's an own. Listen, it's an own about farts. It's okay.
Well, Angel clearly was able to foretell what Strike was going to do in the show.
Everyone's like, what are you talking about? Because it was cut.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so let's get to this. So
let's get to it.
On our Facebook wall, people have scrolled. Those who have scrawled begin with Jennifer Christian, who says the Queen of Thorns owns all. She plays up that she is old and inept, but in the end, she is a criminal mastermind.
Eric,
does she
that
play
one.
Inept? Does she play old? I think there's a line or two that would support that in this chapter. Then, of course, Angel Flores says, but in all seriousness, give it up for Sansa. Own goes to, and this is not that good of an own. It's just a quote. Okay,
what?
But it's a quote. Their farts don't actually smell like roses.
How can you say it's not a good own?
Well, no, it's a quote. Like, it's not, it's an exaggeration. It's like, it's the Lady of Thorns, the Queen of Thorns being snarky. That's what it is. I don't know that it would necessitate a fart emoji. Anyway, we're getting off track. Angel Flores with the fart emoji says, own goes all the Tyrells for having their gas smell like roses. This is truly an amazing fantasy series. Yeah. That is when I knew that this Song of Ice and Fire series was going to be great, when it really allowed me to break out the fart emoji.
Did she say that, or did you say that?
No, I said that. But Angel Flores did add, in all seriousness, give it up for Sansa for learning a thing or two and having the courage to tell the truth.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That takes courage. True.
We definitely do agree. Samantha Jones has a quote for us. Actually, before she has a quote, now I'm reading in order. Thanks, Micah. Lady Olenna owns this chapter without a doubt. She means well, like the Starks, and is generally a good character, but she sure isn't held back by pesky honor like the Starks. She owns, in this chapter, for getting the truth out of Sansa and showcasing her wit and pointing out the foolishness of men for underestimating women. Quote, all these kings would do a deal better if they put down their swords and listened to their mothers. One of my favorite quotes from the whole series. Thank I agree, Samantha Jones.
I think Catelyn would agree, too.
I think so.
And so would Janet Robinson.
Yeah, Janet Robinson, I think she would agree with it wholeheartedly.
Janet Robinson adds, the Queen of Thorns rocks it.
And it, what is it, everyone asks? Well, it's the inexplainable, whatever that is. You know,
there's an emoji for it.
Whatever that is.
It's now time for...
Is it?
What time is it?
The first one from Nicole says, Sansa won. Duh, who else?
Yeah.
Olenna owns. Mm-hmm. Hashtag Cheesemaster.
Cheesemaster!
That's pretty accurate.
Sonia says, all my owns are belong to Olenna, a.k.a. Super Grand. And quote, the cheese will be served when I want it served, and I want it served now.
Yeah.
I like everybody's like fastening onto this cheese thing.
Aiden, owned for Sansa, Butterbumps, which could be a kind of cheese. Whose sole purpose in the Seven Kingdoms is to stop the bushes from listening. Hashtag Don't stop singing.
I like that hashtag.
That's true. If you run out of verses, Butterbumps, make one up.
Jen Wyman says, for Sansa 1, the Queen of Thrones owns Sansa's daydream about marrying Ser Loras.
That's true.
Do you want to redo that and say Queen of Thorns? I think that's what she meant.
That's what the tweet said.
It says Queen of Thrones, but I've... Queen of Thrones isn't a thing. So.
I think both apply, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Oh.
I think that's maybe what she was going for.
All right. Okay.
You don't
Jen
know.
Wyman.
I don't all know.
Right. Well,
she misspelled Ser Loras too. So yeah.
what are we hating on the Twitter speak now? I didn't know.
See,
did
Kate, are you
auto?
And I really that different? I complain about the Facebook own. You complain about the Twitter own.
Yeah, Kate. Are you and Eric really that different?
Good point. Let's continue.
This tweet from Jen Women, not to be confused with Jen Wyman, says, Sansa 1, the Queen of Thorns owns Sansa's daydream about marrying Ser Loras.
Oh, that was great. That was good.
Love
your own. So thank you. Maferva, if that's right, from tweets at us and says, Sansa 1, Butterbumps owned all the little birds and spies in the Red Keep with his singing.
Varys was just like, shit.
Timothy Mulligan owned for Sansa Olenna in the quote, all these kings would do a deal better if they would put down their swords and listen to their mothers.
Mother. Mm-hmm. 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 Mother.
Mother. Got a few more here, right?
Yeah.
Stephanie Bank. Is that her name or did it just get cut off?
I don't know.
Stephanie B says, Garth Greenhand gets my own for planting his seed in half the noble ground of the South.
Garth.
Those ain't pumpkin seeds either.
He likes it where it's fertile.
Garth.
Matthew Marilla, my own goes to Garland Terrell for training 3-1 and for being a better sword than Loras. Yeah,
says Loras.
That's pretty good.
Not Dan says, own goes to Westeros' aquatic life. Hashtag Pufffish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start using that hashtag, Pufffish.
Please do.
And Kate Appleby.
Yay!
Everything Yay. Olenna says is an own. It doesn't matter yeah. which chapter. She doesn't take shit from anyone.
Kate Appleby! Yeah.
Yeah.
She's my favorite Kate.
That's good.
And
the final one. Look at this. The
final one is from Teresa, also known as 7373 Tinkerbell on Twitter, says, my own goes to y'all. Because I'm still catching up.
And that was Mike Adamo.
Wow. It's that difficult to stray from the norm. I like that my name has become a staple.
That was ill as fuck.
The sentences are shorter, so it's easier to say, and it flows better into the context of the segment.
We'll just keep it. Thanks, everyone, for writing in your owns.
These were good owns.
They were really good.
You weren't lying. These are some good owns.
Yeah.
A lot of feedback.
Yeah,
can I read this email?
Yeah, you should read that email we've got on there. The subject line is, we are reading along, ...
Well, I am at least. I just listened to Jamie 1 and want to let you know someone is reading along with you. I am a high school teacher and I started watching the HBO series this summer. I watched all 4 seasons and started listening to your podcast as well.
Huh.
Also, when I finished 4, I felt this huge void that seemingly could only be filled by reading the books. I read the first 2 before school started, and now started Storm of Swords. I had to slow down now that I'm grading all the time, and the timing of your Storm of Swords podcasts could not have been better. I am a few chapters ahead, but it is great to listen to your thoughts and perspectives. That said, my first own... This is his first own, you guys. This is pretty momentous. This is pretty great.
Yeah.
My first own would go to you 3... I don't know which 3 of us he means, but it's us 3. My first own would go to you 3 for fueling my new Game of Thrones obsession and adding the term fooking to my vocabulary. Now, I can't say that I'm comfortable with a high school social studies teacher using the word fooking.
Not only that, he is the chair of the department.
Jeff, social studies department chair.
He's the chair. Never mind. He can say what he wants. I didn't realize he was the department chair.
You know, he's not that far
fail
from
your
me.
Ass.
Jeff. Thank you so much. Very
Thank
kind
you
of
you.
I'm glad.
Job.
I'm glad. This is like probably the first email where someone's been like, hey, your pacing's pretty good. Usually yeah. you're like, guys, I've read the book 3 times already.
Since you started. It up. Which we are going to be speeding it up soon, just a little, you know, who are listening.
Fooking legend and die.
Jeff is a fooking legend of a teacher.
Jeff, you are a fooking legend.
Jeff,
Thank
here's
you.
Our challenge to you. Play a snippet of our episode in your classroom and take video footage of your children, however ages they are. That doesn't make sense.
He's high school.
Laughing, crying.
Okay, they're high school. Take footage of the kids that are in the classroom listening to the outtakes From the Midsummer's
Preferably
Dream.
Preferably with Kate laughing.
Yeah. I was going to say, do we have a an uncensored kind of child friendly 30 seconds of our show?
That one's I think uncensored? Friendly. I think unless the laughter is considered like not okay. Because it's pretty,
pretty raucous laughter. Right.
Kate's laughing is just downright inappropriate.
It's filthy.
Yeah, she laughs that hard.
Not safe for work. Not safe to be operating heavy vehicles while you're listening to that.
Steffers wrote on Twitter. She said, "My stomach hurts and I'm crying with laughter from the end of the Game of Thrones episode with the Orlando live show clip." So show that episode to your high school students. And
I want to know which three of us he's giving an own to.
Yeah, it's true.
You three.
Jeff, please write in again and explain which three of us get an own so that the next person can be kicked off the show.
And it's cool if you don't share it with your students because
Game of Thrones is a very personal thing. That's a terrible idea. It's a terrible plan. Don't ever listen to Zach.
Say fooking. It's okay. Well, no. Nah.
You know who else is new to the podcast?
Who?
Mitchell.
Okay. Mitchell. Oh, yeah. Look at that. Hey, Mitchell.
Hey, Mitchell.
He says brand new to the podcast. Loving it so far. So.
Oh, well, hello, sir.
Welcome.
We're so glad you're here. I remember seeing that tweet and I got this feeling of like, I just want to retweet this 8 times and just make sure everybody that listens to this show and tweets says hi to this guy and welcomes him.
You know what you can do? You can retweet it and then the next day you can unretweet it and then retweet it again and it'll show up in everybody's timeline. Oh, just do that every
day. Does that still work? Is that fixed over on Twitter? Oh, okay.
Benjamin Smith on Twitter, since we're reading shout outs. We said we were recording tonight. He goes, "Can't wait. Roll Tide," from a listener in Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Okay, exclamation point.
I've been to Tuscaloosa.
Me too.
Is Roll Tide like a thing in Alabama?
Yeah, football. Roll Tide. Crimson Tide.
Oh, yeah. Crimson Tide. Excellent.
We love Alabama.
Big fan. Alabama. Big Tide.
But then we have one final tweet here, I think, from Gareth, right?
Yes, sure. He's from The Office.
Yes.
Sorry.
Mr. Hook, as he's become to know on this
Hook,
show, he says, "Only one good thing about waking up at 3 a.m. on Saturday." Well, who the hell? First of all, who the hell is asleep by 3 a.m. on Saturday? I mean, come on.
Party.
He says, "Game of Owns and Tenacious D in the twilight."
Whoa.
Do you throw down goo and the D at the same time?
I've never heard of anybody chasing our show with such a cool, like, alternate idea, like a cool alternate pastime as Tenacious D.
And the twilight of wherever he lives, so
maybe
Gareth.
It's Twilight. It's like Twilight fan fiction that he's writing. Like, his characters of Bella and Edward are listening to Game of Thrones and Tenacious D in Twilight. Think about it.
I think he should write Lefty and Righty into his next story. You know, we read tweets from both our Twitter and our Facebook outlets and our email. Let us remind you now what those specific addresses are. On Facebook, you can scroll up on our wall, send us a note, send us your owns when we ask for them, and otherwise check out our large variety of very awesome Oni content. Facebook.com/GameOfOwns. Of course, over on Twitter, we tweet often for you to tell your father things from us.
Yes.
And that's at twitter.com/GameOfOwns or at GameOfOwns on Twitter if you're tweeting at us. And then when you email us, please do so contact@GameOfOwns.com.
That was good.
And one other place you can reach us is on iTunes, where as of right now, 274 people have left us reviews. That's just in the United States. Doesn't count in other places around the world.
Not that it doesn't count, but we can't see it.
It's our huge international market.
In case
you're
wondering, Micah can name at least one other country.
Okay. <That's right>. Texas. Anyway, we do have a review we'd like to share with you today. And great that this individual KO driver...
Oh, yes.
I completely fucked that up.
KO
it
driver?
It is. It's taxi driver again. Let's hear it.
No, sorry. It's KO diver. Yeah, listen, not driver.
Can I just say,
I'm too used to taxi
Micah,
driver.
I'm really, buddy, I really didn't want to say this ever, but just to keep the mystique between these two people, it was also taxi diver. There was no R.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
My gosh.
So, I mean, I think it could be the same person.
All right. They say, "I was a huge follower of MuggleNet, and now my obsession is goo. By far, the most interesting, informative, enlightening, funny, while keeping me unsullied podcast I have listened to. Hmm. Thank to Eric.
just one.
Wait, me? That's it. No, no, no.
You get one ears thing.
Perked. What?
Micah, hashtag speak into the mic, Micah. In parentheses, JK.
It's a free show.
Zach and Kate. And he leaves a signature, or she, oh, KO Diver.
Oh,
driver, driver.
So good. So
just
good.
Just say driver.
It's you know, I feel compelled to say that MuggleNet is still a thing. I don't know. There's something very past tense about that comment, but thank you for listening and being familiar with us. Yeah. And now us being your obsession, we love to hear that's going straight to our heads.
Mm-hmm. I don't love to hear that. Just so you know, don't ever obsess. It's everything in moderation, even goo.
Yeah.
Even goo. True.
Thanks to, KO Diver.
Driver.
Appreciate it. And, he or she was very good at listening to our disclaimer, which is in the month of September, which is when they did this. Wow. Nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable. Mm. So,
got the memo. And
does that change now that it's October? Wait, it's not.
Oh no, my September. Goodness!
You'll be okay, buddy.
Have another beer,
Eric. We'll get you a Game of Thrones calendar.
Yeah,
we'll figure it out. All Theon covers.
All Theon.
Game spreads. Of Owns just calendar. How about that?
Ooh, oh, that should be one of our levels.
That's a good idea. That could be fun. Well, write in and tell us if that's something you would like to see. So far, we've already. What have we planned?
We should talk about Patreon though. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/goo. Come on down, won't you?
Yeah.
We've just added some new milestone goals to our Patreon. Yeah. Before we had some wacky ones that were like at $50,000 a month. Eric would get a giant tattoo of Theon on his
back.
Wait,
it wasn't a tattoo.
It's definitely a tattoo.
Go straight into
it's definitely a tattoo.
Yeah, definitely a tattoo.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's right. So if you're interested in seeing the new show, My Little Oni, directed and created by Eric Skull, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/goo. Anything could happen.
Anything will happen.
We will see you next week, everybody. All of the best to you and yours.
Fucking Marty Jannetty put him through the plate glass window.
All right,
the Barber Beefcake's barber shop.